Well, good. Good evening, everybody. The recording has started. We're starting. Shmuel Plotzker coming at you live from Gulf Meadows Synagogue in Cincinnati, Ohio, and our School of Jewish Studies. Tonight, Tuesday night, I think it's February, February 12th, 2019, and we're going to begin 1 Kings chapter 8, verse 64. We are hopefully going to finish off chapter 8. Incredibly, it's taken us a very long time, but that's the way it is. When you don't daven things up and you try to stay focused and you move forward through the material. So if you have 1 Kings, we're going to begin right now. Chapter 8, friends, excuse me, and if you've got the Judaica Press, then join me on page 102. Just a little bit of a review. We'll read it in English. Shlomo is praying. He prayed to Hashem that he should accept Jewish people wherever they are. And then he also prayed that we Jewish people, that Hashem should be with us, and that he may incline our hearts to him to go along his ways and his judgments, the Torah. So that all the peoples of the earth may know that Hashem is God. There is none else. Ein od, Hashem hu Elokim, ein od. God is God, there's nobody else but God. There's nobody else but him, Hashem. Let your heart therefore be whole with God, to follow his statutes and keep his precepts. A little bit of review from last week. And then the pasuk says, Shlomo slaughtered the peace offerings, verse 63, 22,000 oxen, 120,000 sheep. With this, the king and all the children of Israel inaugurated the temple of God. Okay? And now we begin, page 102 in your Judaica, chapter 8, verse 64, Samach Dalet. This is going to trigger a Talmudical debate between two rabbis in a Gemara in Zevachim. Luckily for you, I looked it up a little bit. I've got it in front of me. And hopefully we'll be able to figure out the whole thing. So here we are. Bayomahu, I'm on 64, verse 64 in chapter 8. Bayomahu, on that day, Kirash HaMelech is Toch HaChotzer. The king consecrated Toch HaChotzer, the middle of the court. You got to bank that phrase in your mind, because that's going to come up. What does it mean that the king is sanctifying the Toch HaChotzer, the middle of the court? All right, so just hold on to that. Okay, he consecrated the middle of the court, Asher Lefnei Beis Hashem, which was before the house of God, the temple of Hashem. Ki asa sham es ha'ola ves ha'mincha ves chel ve'ashlamim. For there, he offered the burnt offerings, the ola, ves ha'mincha, the meal offerings, ves chel ve'ashlamim, and the fat of the peace offerings. All right? Ki mizbach hanechoshes asher lefnei Hashem, because the copper altar, the mizbach hanechoshes, the altar of copper, which was before God, katon me'achil es ola es amincha es chel ve'ashlamim, was too small. Was katon me'achil. It was too small to contain the burnt offerings, meal offerings, and the peace offerings, the fat of the peace offerings. Okay, so on the surface, that may not look like the most complex pasuk in the whole wide world. I'll read it again. On that day, the king consecrated the middle of the court that was before the temple of God, because there he offered the burnt offerings, meal offerings, and fat of the peace offerings, because the copper altar that was before God, whatever copper altar that was, however it got there, and whoever made it, according to this, it was katon me'achilas ola. It was just too small to contain the burnt offerings, so therefore he had to consecrate the middle of the court, because the mizbeach was just too small to handle all the kabanos. Okay, so let's leave it to our rabbis to unravel this and unpack it And they're going to do a very thorough job of unpacking it. There's going to be a lot of stuff over here. So here we go. Let's read. We're going to be focusing on Rashi, although there's a monster Radak. I didn't prepare it. You know, it's just so big, and we're going to be seeing the big Rashi and some others, and I'm sure we're going to be pointing at the Radak, but in English. And then we're going to try to see a Gemara. So, I mean, at least for tonight, we'll hopefully have seen what we can see. On that day, the king consecrated the middle of the court. And let's go right to the commentary, the footnote on that pasuk. Here they're going to be quoting Gemara in Zevachim 59b. The king consecrated the middle of the courtyard. These words are to be taken literally, says Rashi. Devarim kichsavan, words as they were written. Take them literally. He consecrated the middle of the courtyard. Take it literally. This is Rabbi Yehuda's view. That is to say, and this is following Rashi, Shlomo hallowed the pavement of the court. He hallowed it. He made it holy. He made the pavement of the court holy with the sanctity of the altar in order to offer sacrifices on the pavement. I should see exactly what the word is. The ritzpah is the word that's being used. And you and I think about the term pavement. I don't know about you, but I always think about like sidewalk. I shouldn't think like that. The floor. The ritzpah is, of course, the floor. And that's what he's hallowing. That's what he's sanctifying. He's sanctifying, like the pasuk says, the middle of the courtyard. Take the words literally. That's Rabbi Yehuda's view. Shlomo sanctified the floor of the court, the flooring, with the sanctity of the mizbeach. However holy the mizbeach was, now the floor is that holy, in order to offer sacrifices on the floor. Okay? Now we continue. What else did the pasuk say? The copper altar, ki mizbach hanachoshes, the copper altar, asher lefnei Hashem, which was before God, katon me'achilas ola, etc. It was too small to contain the burnt offerings, and that's why he sanctified the floor, to be able to offer sacrifices all over the floor. And we're going to see exactly what that means, the floor. There's going to be a particular agency involved in that, meaning another altar. But right now we're told that the copper altar that was before Hashem was too small to be able to handle all these sacrifices that Shlomo is now going to offer. So what does it mean when it says the copper altar? And incredibly, I think, Rashi says, Mizbach HaNechoshes, Mizbach HaAvonim, Sha'asa Tachas Mizbach HaNechoshes. It was the altar of stones. The stone altar was too small. Not necessarily the copper altar, but the stone altar. Okay, it's making my eyes glaze over. I mean, if it says copper altar, then shouldn't it mean copper altar? And not the stone altar that he constructed. But you know what? Let me read this in English just for the sake of cohesiveness, so we'll have some idea and coherence. Here we go. Excuse me, I had some chips and some soda, so you'll forgive me. That's been dinner so far. Not my wife's fault, my fault. Shul took more time than it needed to, but I love it. Had learned some Mishnayos. We finished off Masechta Yuma, and earlier we finished Masechta Megillah. I hope us to finish Masechta Pesach before Pesach, and hopefully do Seder Moed and do a Siyum, God willing. Chevron Mishnayos meeting at Gulf Manor Synagogue after Marav every night, Sunday through Thursday. And you know what? A little bit every single day, and you can bite off big chunks of Torah. 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there. I'm telling you, people, that's everybody's secret. You ask a guy who's doing a Siyum, where'd you find the time? It's always the same. I had a sefer with me, And whenever I had 5 minutes waiting online in the bank, I looked in. And whenever I was waiting for my chavrusa to show up and he was 10 minutes late, and people can be late. We all get that. Nobody wants to be late, but you're late. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, the bus doesn't come. There's traffic. We get it. So you take advantage of that. 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there. You got a safer in front of you. Boom, you finish it. After 6 months, a year, boom, you finish it. You make a CM. Boom, another CM. Another one, and another one. And I'm talking to myself over here. We're going to finish up. I was learning, on Monday afternoons. So hopefully some of you are with me on that. I'll make this very quick. Excuse me, Leil Shabbos. We're talking about Parshas Truma, and talking about this and that, and it reminds me of something that we came across in our study over here in Malachim, and then I was reminded of something that I saw in Eimah Banu Smecha. So the Sefer, Eimah Banu Smecha, shed a little bit of light on a pasuk in Parshas Truma, thanks to a shtickle from Malachim Aleph. And although I cannot think of it at the moment, I thought of it then, Friday night. It was fresh in my mind. I was able to answer my kid's question. So hopefully I get the schus for the Lima Torah, even if I remember it. Friends, take advantage. We all have to. We all have to take advantage of every spare moment. I'm talking to myself over here loud and clear. Here we go. From the copper altar, says the pasuk, ki mizbach hanachoshes, because the copper altar, which was in front of God, it was too small to handle all the traffic, all the sacrifices. Says Rashi, that is to say, the stone altar that Shlomo constructed in lieu of the copper altar of Moshe, because Moshe built the copper altar, and it stayed with Klal Yisrael throughout the years in the desert and in the Mishkan. And now here it is, in the Beis HaMikdash. But it's a little bit too small, we're told. The stone altar that Shlomo built in lieu of the copper altar of Moshe, that stone altar was too small. That was too small to contain the burnt offerings and the meal offerings because they brought very many. Now this is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in Zevachim. So you know what? In order to read that Rashi intelligently, believe it or not, we got to see the Gemara in Zevachim. And we do that occasionally around here. So without further ado, whether you have Zevachim in front of you or not, and I can't imagine anybody's got a Gemara Zevachim lying around waiting for me to cite it. But if you do, if you are at home and you've got a Shas, or you're in a Beis Medrash right now, you've got a Shas in front of you, and you can find your way to a Masechta Zevachim in the Bavli, and turn to Nun Tes, Amud Aleph, at the very bottom. And I'm going to work off of the art scroll, so that we can have a running translation, and some footnotes. And that's how we do it. Make life easy for ourselves. Why not? Torah study can be tough enough as it is. Make it a little bit easy for you, especially if time is of the essence. So look, take a look. The bottom of Nun Tes Amud Aleph. Okay. The Gemara gives the full context of the statement Rabbi Yehuda alluded to in the previous answer. I haven't even seen that. Don't worry about it. My Rabbi Yehuda, here it is. What's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda? The Tanya, we learned in a Brisa, and whenever you see the word Tanya, think Brisa, okay? Always, Tanya always introduces a Brisa. Bayomahu kidasha melech es tocha chotzer. Okay, on that day the king sanctified the interior of the courtyard. Ki mizbach, and now here they put into parentheses, sha'asa Moshe. Because the Mizbeach and Achoshes, which Moshe made, Shalevnei Hashem, which is before Hashem, Katon Me'achil. Because the copper altar that was before Hashem was too small to accommodate the Ola offerings. Okay, says the Gemara, Devarim Kichsavan, these words are to be understood exactly Kichsavan as they're written. That is, here's the art scroll, they should be taken literally to mean that King Solomon sanctified the floor of the courtyard so that offerings could be burned on it, on the floor, because the altar was too small for the many offerings brought on that day. And they're like 100,000 this and 30,000 that, or whatever it was, 20,000 this, 120,000 sheep. It's a lot. So you're going to do it on one small little altar. So you sanctify the floor, and now you can make many offerings, you know, on that day. Dear Rabbi Yehuda, that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. But Rabbi Yossi Aglieli is going to argue with him. Amar Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yossi said to Rabbi Yehuda, I'll be like, you know what? Let us read a footnote. If one is available, and there are some, let's read a footnote or two before we get to Rabbi Yossi Aglieli. Let's just cover our bases, and we will read a footnote and make sure that we have this locked into our heads. Again, we're talking about our pasuk, 1 Kings chapter 8, verse 64. On that day, the king sanctified the interior of the courtyard, because the copper altar that was before God was too small to accommodate the olah offerings. Okay? This is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore, Solomon sanctified the floor of the courtyard. Read it explicitly. Whatever the pasuk says, take that literally. He sanctified the floor so he could burn things on the floor. Did Rabbi Yehuda? That's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Footnote says, and it's only going to be one footnote, the preceding verse in verse 63 in the Torah, in the Tanakh, enumerates 142,000 sacrifices. Since the altar built by Solomon could not consume that many sacrifices in one day, Shlomo sanctified the pavement, they say over here, meaning the floor of the temple courtyard, thereby converting it, the floor, into an extension of the Mizbeach, the altar. It is concerning this statement of Rabbi Yehuda that Rava says, and it's going to be in the next daf, 68, Rabbi Yehuda agrees in respect to the sacrificial bloods. That is, although Rabbi Yehuda maintains that offerings may be burned on the courtyard floor, he agrees that their blood may not be sprinkled there. You can burn it on the floor, but you can't take the blood of that animal and sprinkle that on the floor. Oh, no, 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 no. That's not what the floor is for. The floor is for burning the flesh. But you got to get the blood and sprinkle that up against the Mizbeach, the altar. Even Rabbi Yehuda agrees with that. Rabbi Yehuda agrees that you got to take the blood and sprinkle it up against the altar. Continuing in the footnote, the altar in Solomon's temple was actually made of stone, not copper. The verse refers to it as the copper altar because it replaced the copper altar that was used since Moshe's time. Now I'm beginning to get it myself. I was not hopping. Why in the world is Rashi calling a stone altar the copper altar? And there you have it. The Mizbeach in Shlomo's temple is actually made of stone, not Nechoshes. But we call it Mizbeach HaNechoshes because it replaced the copper altar that was used in Moshe, by Moshe's time. He made a copper altar. Ah, do you see it now, people? Shlomo sees that little Mizbeach and he says, ain't no way I'm going to be able to get any work done over here. 100,000 plus animals, ain't no way that small little copper altar is going to do this. I'm therefore going to sanctify the floor and we're going to offer sacrifices all over the place. Along the way, he also built a much bigger altar that's made out of stone. It was made out of stone. But we call it the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, the copper altar. Now, here's the thing. Even that stone altar, which replaced Moshe's altar, even that's too small for the work that's got to get done. So many animals, 100,000 plus, 142,000. So even though Shlomo built a very big, and we're going to see it, he built a very big stone altar, it still is not big enough. And that explains the pasuk, at least for Rabbi Yehuda. Pasuk says, On that day, the king sanctified the interior of the courtyard because the copper altar, which was made out of stone and now called the copper altar, it's still too small. I mean, how can you do 100,000 sacrifices on one altar? Can't do it. So he's got to sanctify the whole floor. That is Rabbi Yehuda. Understand the words? Rabbi Yehuda says, according to their literal understanding, he sanctifies the interior of the courtyard, meaning the floor. This way he's going to be able to do a lot of sacrifices. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda is not out of the woods. He's going to be asked a good question by Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Here we go. Are you ready? Okay, here we go. Amar Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi said to Rabbi Yehuda, V'halo kvar nemar elef olos yala shlomo mizbeach ahu. But hasn't that already been written? Hasn't it already been said? I'm now on 59B. If you're in the Gemara, you're on 59B at the very top. But isn't it already said in regard to the copper altar that was used in the time of Moshe until Shlomo built the temple? 1,000 olos Shlomo offered upon that altar, upon Moshe's altar, Moshe's small little copper altar. 1,000 olos Shlomo offered upon that altar. A footnote, and that takes us back to 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 4. 1,000 olos Shlomo offered upon that altar. So that's a lot. Says the footnote, the incident referred to in this verse took place toward the beginning of Shlomo's reign, which was 4 years before the building of the temple. So 4 years before the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, Shlomo was offering up 1,000 animals on Moshe's little rinky-dink copper nechoshes, the copper altar of Moshe. Well, that's a lot of animals, people. Now, I know it's not 142,000, but still, it's a lot on the small little altar. That's a lot of animals. So watch the logic of Rabbi Yossi HaGalili. Here's the footnote. Well, here's the explanation within the text in the article. This verse, 1,000 olos did Shlomo offer upon that altar, back up in chapter 3, verse 4. This verse implies that 1,000 offerings could be burned on Moshe's altar in one day. Footnote, the fire from heaven that was always on the altar consumed the offerings with exceptional rapidity, says Rashi. Okay, fine. So that little, small, little copper nechoshes, the copper altar of Moshe, that was able to do 1,000 sacrifices in a day. Says Rabbi Yossi Aglili, V'ilu b'veis olamim hu omer. Now, concerning the dedication of the eternal temple, and that's Shlomo's Beis HaMikdash, when you see Beis Olamim, the eternal temple, that refers to the Beis HaMikdash of Shlomo, Solomon's temple. You're going to say, it was destroyed. We don't want to talk about that right now. It's the eternal temple. V'ilu b'veis olamim hu omer. Now, concerning the dedication of the eternal temple, what does it say? It says in chapter 8, verse 63, Shlomo offered Shlomo offerings, which he offered to Hashem, 22,000 oxen. That was the previous pasuk. And 120,000 sheep. A total of 142,000 offerings. Thus, the altar of Shlomo had to be able to burn 142 times more than the altar of Moshe. Because it offered up in one day 142 times as many animals. Okay? Uchsha'ata magia lecheshbon olos oleminyan amos. But the altar of Shlomo was so much larger than the altar of Moshe, such that when you arrive at the sum of ola offerings, when you uchsha'ata magia, when you come to the number of ola offerings brought on each altar, and you compare it And you compare it to the number of square amos of each altar, or the minyan amos. And you compare the number of amos of Solomon's altar and Moshe's altar, zeh gadol mizeh. It emerges that this one, the altar of Shlomo, was proportionately larger for its needs than this one, the altar of Moshe, was for its needs. Let's take a look at some footnotes over here. Footnote 5. Where is that? When you arrive at the sum of Ola offerings, footnote 5, here we go. Although the preceding verse, verse 63, mentions only Shlomim offerings, the large number of sacrifices included Ola offerings as well, as stated in verse 64. The Brisa refers to all the offerings in general as Ola offerings, because Ola offerings are mentioned first in verse 64. See that goes for the Yavetz compared to Merome Sadeh and Taharas HaKodesh. Okay, so even though the preceding verse mentions only Shlamim, the large number of Karbanos included Olos as well. All right, now there's another footnote, and we're going to just reread this Talmud over here. But the altar of Shlomo was so much larger than the altar of Moshe. When you arrive at the sum of Ola offerings brought on each altar and you compare it to the number of square amos of each altar, the altar of Shlomo was proportionately larger for its needs than the altar of Moshe was for its own needs. See the footnote. The top of the altar of Moshe was 5 amos square. At each corner stood a 1 amma cube known as a horn. The inner corners of the horns demarcated a square of 3 amos by 3 amos. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm seeing the picture that they're drawing. A strip 1 amma wide within the perimeter of this square was provided for the Kohanim so that they could walk all the way around the top of the altar. All right? This left an area that was only 1 amma square for the burning of the sacrifices. On the altar of Shlomo, however, the area for burning sacrifices was 400 square amos, 20 by 20. This is the opinion of Rabbi Yosef, recorded in Mishnayos Midos, chapter 3, Mishnah 1. Thus, the area for burning sacrifices on Shlomo's altar was 400 times larger than that of Moshe's altar, which was 1 amma square, an area of only 1 amma square for the burning of the sacrifices. Shlomo's altar had 400 times larger area than that of Moshe's altar. Consequently, since 1,000 offerings could be burned in one day on Moshe's altar, Shlomo's altar was large enough for how many? Well, 400 times as big. Therefore, can handle 400 times 1,000 offerings. Whatever Moshe offered 1,000 in one day, this is 400 times bigger. So you do the math. You can therefore do 400,000 sacrifices. This is far more than the 142,000 offerings of the dedication ceremony. So you see over here that zeh gadol mizeh. This one was larger than this one. And I would have not, I guess I could have figured that out on my own, but it's very, very helpful for them to lay it out over here that proportionately it's so much bigger. The altar of Shlomo was proportionately larger for its needs, and they add that as well, proportionately larger for its needs than the altar of Moshe was for its needs. Moshe's altar was big enough for 1,000 animals in a day. as that's what Shlomo offered 4 years before the inauguration. But over here, you've got this idea that the Mizbeach of Moshe Rabbeinu is 400 times smaller than that of Shlomo. Shlomo's altar is 400 times bigger than Moshe's. Shlomo's altar is a stone Mizbeach. It is now going to be called the Mizbach HaNachoshes, the copper altar, and it's going to replace the copper altar of Moshe. It's going to be called the copper altar in our verse in 64, even though it's made out of stone. And this Mizbeach, according to the Pasuk, is too small for its needs, for all the animals that are going to be held. But according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, don't learn it up like that. Rabbi Yehuda is wrong in the Gemara and Zavachim over here. Rather, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, the Mizbeach of Moshe, of Shlomo is 400 times the size of Moshe's altar. Therefore, it could handle 400 times the traffic. And if Moshe Rabbeinu offered up, if Shlomo rather, offered up 1,000 animals in one day, and now he's building a Mizbeach that's 400 times as big, so he could handle 400,000 animals, and over here he only needed 142,000 animals, so he had much more room on his Mizbeach than even he needed, according to the argument of Rabbi Yosef Lili here in the Gemara in Zavachim. Memtes Amud Aleph and Amud Beis.
Was the base 400 times the size of the Mishkan? I don't know about that. I don't know about that. Because I thought the things were proportional inside.
I think that there's some talk that there was non-proportionality going on. And there's a lot of talk about that. I mean, how could it be that that the proportions are going to change? But I mean, I didn't really research that. And I think Rabbi Trapp may have discussed that pre-Mincha. I wasn't there, unfortunately. But there's a lot of Torah about that. How does it work? If it's supposed to be eternal, so how come suddenly things are going to be so much bigger? And what about the Yecheskel final temple? What about those numbers? That is going to be a whole other ball of wax that we have to address. But what we're doing right now is trying to figure out verse 64. We could probably spend the whole night on this. Verse 64, remember, says, on that day the king consecrated the middle of the court, the Tocha Chatzah, the middle of the courtyard that was before the Beis HaMikdash. For there he offered the burnt offerings, meal offerings, and fat of the peace offerings. Because the copper altar that was before God was too small to contain the burnt offerings and the meal offerings and the fat offerings. Now, when you read that pasuk at first blush, you're saying to yourself, he is going to consecrate the very floor of the courtyard to be able to offer sacrifices because the copper altar, presumably which Moshe Rabbeinu built, was just way too small. And because it's just way too small, he needed to have more space to be able to offer up sacrifices. So a quick review of what we just read, Rabbi Yehuda said that when you see those words in the pasuk, understand them literally. Devarim tichsavan. These words should be understood literally, says Rabbi Yehuda. They should be taken literally to mean that Shlomo sanctified the floor of the courtyard so the offerings could be offered and burned on it because the Mizbeach was too small for the many offerings brought on that day. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda.
You mean that he would build, ad hoc fireplace? I don't know what the right word is to say, or places where you could burn
Well, say it again.
I'm saying, so what do you gain by having the floor? You would have to build some kind of ad hoc structures that would duplicate the functions of a Mizbeach, right? Where you would be, I don't know what you would call them, oven stoves.
Hold that thought, because what he's going to say is
this Mizbeach that Shlomo is going to build out of stone is going to be so massive, bless you, so enormous, so big, that it's going to be put inside the ground. It's going to be installed inside, deep into the earth. And I think maybe that is a possibility as to what's meant by sanctifying the very floor. Because this massive structure, this Solomonic new altar, this Mizbeach, that Shlomo's going to build is going to be so big, according to Yossi Aglili, that maybe it's going to take over the very space of a good chunk of this courtyard. That's how big this thing is actually going to wind up being. Massively much bigger than the small little kleinchiker little altar that Moshe built.
What does it mean, Rashi says, where he's explaining, quoting of Yehuda, the Hakir of Harizpah? And those words are the words of Gemara? Rabbi Yehuda,
no, those are the words of that's Rashi adding in. If you don't have a maybe Rashi feels if you don't have a Gemara and Zavachim in front of you, he's going to help you out, and he's going to add those words, the Hakir al Harizpah. To sacrifice it on the actual floor. They call it the pavement over here in translation. On the actual ground, on the surface. I'm thinking that maybe a way to understand that is that the Mizbeach that Shlomo is going to build out of stone is going to be so big that it's going to be, it's going to take up a good part of the Ritzpah of the floor, and therefore it's going to be considered as if you're offering it, you know, a la Ritzpah on the floor, but it's going to be on a Mizbeach. So that's the best I can do. I'm going to read you Amram. Here's a footnote. The preceding verse in 63, what did it say over there? What did we see last week? 120,000 sheep and 20,000 oxen. That's 142,000 animals. That is a massive number of animals to process. Since the altar built by Shlomo could not consume that many sacrifices in one day, Shlomo sanctified the pavement of the temple courtyard, meaning the floor. The word is Ritzpah, that means floor. I think pavement, I keep on thinking sidewalk. I'm a nut. I keep on thinking wrong. Pavement, they're saying, is the floor. He's going to sanctify the floor of this courtyard, thereby converting it into an extension of the Mizbeach. Okay, now I'm going to skip a little paragraph because we don't need that. It's about blood sprinkling. We go into the next paragraph, and that is, the altar in Shlomo's temple was actually made of stone, not copper. This is why Rashi is so confusing. When you see Rashi up and orc on the Pasuk, and you see the words in the Pasuk, Ki Mizbach HaNechoshes, and Rashi writes, Mizbach HaAvanim Sha'asa, Tachas Mizbach
HaNechoshes,
instead of, right, Mizbach HaAvanim, a stone altar, instead of a copper altar, I am a little bit confused. I have no idea what's going on at this point. Ah, so here's what's going on.
What?
The altar in Shlomo's temple was actually made out of stone, not copper. But why do we call it Mizbach HaNechoshes in the Pasuk? The Pasuk calls it Mizbach HaNechoshes because it replaced the Mizbach HaNechoshes that was used since Moshe's time. We have taken Moshe's Mizbach HaNechoshes. We're going to put it in Geniza. We're going to replace it with a massive stone Mizbeach. We're going to call that Mizbach HaNechoshes. Updated and improved. But it's going to be called Mizbach HaNechoshes, even though it's made out of stone. Wrap your mind around that for a second. That's the pshat that we have to come on to, according to Rabbi Yehuda, and Rashi's making it very clear, I think. You got a question, Ms. Miller? You look like you can't wait to ask me that.
Okay, I'm reading in the commentary here, and this doesn't, either it doesn't make sense or it's not clear or they've left out some words. It says, for the copper altar, that is the stone altar that Shlomo constructed in lieu of the copper altar of Moshe, was too small to contain the burnt offering. So the question is, this makes it sound like Shlomo's altar's too small.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're right. Yes, you're right. It does indeed make it sound like that.
Okay.
And maybe that's Rabbi Yehuda's position. Stay with me for
okay.
just 1 second. I'm trying my best to learn Pshat Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosef Galili.
Mm-hmm.
All I can do is what I can do. And it seems, according to this Pshetel, we are replacing original copper altar Moses with Solomonic stone altar, and we're going to call that a copper altar. Don't ask me why. Don't ask me why. I guess I've got to deal with the reality. And we're going to call this Solomonic stone structure a Mizbeah, a Mizbeah HaNechoshes, a copper one. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's still too small. And that's why he's got to sanctify a whole floor. That courtyard must have been huge. And for Yehuda, an altar is an altar is an altar. How big could it be? And it can only be, maybe a little bit bigger than Moshe. Bigger, yes. But not a massive supero structure that's going to be, oh my goodness, like some kind of mutant on steroids, Mizbeach. No, it's going to be a Mizbeach that can handle some traffic, but not 142,000 sacrifices. Therefore, he's got to sanctify the whole courtyard.
Okay. Now, you said that it was 400 times the size of Moshe's.
That's Rabbi Yossi HaGalili. Let's
okay.
wait 1 second.
Okay.
I think we have to wait and give Rabbi Yossi HaGalili his day in the sun.
Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate it. We just have seen Rabbi Yehuda.
Oh, you're right.
Now
we've
got to see Rabbi Yossi HaGalili. We can't do a machlokas without both parties speaking up. Now, this is a little confusing. We'll do whatever we can. So here we go. Now, let's let Rabbi Yosef HaGalili weigh in. He's going to argue magnificently against Rabbi Yehuda's pshat, which made some sense to me. On some level, it makes some sense. He's going to sanctify a whole courtyard. So Mr. HaGalili, no. You don't have to come on to that. He's sanctifying a courtyard. No. Listen to Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef HaGalili says as follows. Nuva halokvar nemar. This is the Gemara in Zevachim, in Memtes Amud Beis. I'm quoting. I'm going to read it for you. Nu, didn't it already say? Hasn't it already been written? Quote. I'm giving you a pasuk. 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 4. Look it up yourself.
Yes, that's 1:3.
Mistake. Got to be a mistake.
Got to be
a mistake in our Judaica press. And I'm going to.
It's a different passage.
Well, it's 1 Kings 3, 4, according to our scroll. Please, let's take a quickie look at 3, 4. And 1 second. Pasuk Dalet 4.
Eloh Elohim Yahweh Shlomo.
Bingo.
Those words are there.
That's it. Eloh Elohim Yahweh Shlomo.
Very briefly, I can look at 1:1.
Don't even bother.
3,
no, 1:3 is not the beginning. No, it was a ridiculous site to be. It was a typo. You have to recognize just Avishak Hashunamis. Okay, that's the very beginning of 1 Kings. I ain't got nothing to do with it. Okay.
You know what? The first of 1 could be from Kings 1.
Ah, Kings 1, and then 3 is a chapter.
Yeah,
but that's poorly cited. It should be 1 Kings.
Right.
1 Kings 3.
Right.
Then I can live with it. But not Kings 1:3. That's nuts.
You know, I'm saying that the text that, you know, they could have made the mistake that one can make.
Exactly. So we are seeing chapter 3, verse 4. We see that Shlomo offered up 4 years ago, 4 years before the inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash, Shlomo offered up 1,000 animals on Moshe's old, rickety, centuries-old copper altar. And he did 1,000 animals on it. Not bad. It's not 100,000, but it's not bad. But still, it's not. He needs more room. Shlomo needs a lot of space. So Rabbi Yosef HaGalili says, we already know that Shlomo offered up 4 years prior to the inauguration of the temple, 1,000 animals. See chapter 3. This verse implies that 1,000 offerings could be burned on Moshe's altar in one day. V'ilu b'veis olam im hu omer. Now, concerning the Beis Olamim, that means Shlomo's Beis Hamikdash, I would never have known that until this footnote, you know, made it clear to me. Rashi and Chulin says that's pshat in Beis Olamim. The eternal temple refers to Shlomo's temple. I destroyed? No. Foundations are still there. Things are hidden. The holiness is there. It seems to be very clear. And Rashi says, Beis Olamim, Gemara says, Beis Olamim, the eternal temple, what does it say about the Beis HaMikdash? Our Pasuk, Vayizbach Shlomo, Zevach HaShlomim, Asher Zevach LaHashem. Shlomo offered the Zevachim, which he offered to Hashem, Bakar Esher, verse 63 that we saw last week. Bakar Esher Mishnayim, Elef, 22,000 oxen. And here's, you don't even see it right now being cited, 120,000 sheep. Total 142,000 offerings. That's in the previous pasuk. Therefore, the altar of Shlomo had to be able to burn 142 times more than Moshe's altar. This is Rabbi Yosef Galili continuing. Uchshata magia lecheshbon olos. So when the altar of Shlomo was so much larger than that of Moshe. So that when you arrive at the sum of the Ola offerings brought on each altar, and you compare it, Uleminyan Amos, and you compare that number of offerings to the number of square Amos of each Mizbeach, of each altar, says Rabbi Yosef Galili, Zeh Gadol Mizeh. Now wait and listen to the translation and the massaging that you need to put in. It doesn't just mean this is bigger than that. Of course Shlomo's is bigger than Moshe's. We get that too, without even like thinking. But watch what he says. See how they translate. It emerges that Zeh, Gadol Mizeh, the altar of Shlomo was proportionately larger for its needs. Stay with me. Than the altar of Moshe was for its own needs. How do you know? Here's the footnote. And for this, you got to see the diagram. Here's the diagram in Zevachim, in the Art School of Zevachim. I'm pointing at it right over here. Here's the diagram this is going to be. This is going to be Moshe's Mizbeach. The Mizbeach HaNechoshes of Moshe Rabbeinu is going to look according to this. Now I'm going to read this, and here we go. Here we go. Got to take off my glasses for this one. The top of the altar of Moshe was 5 amos square. 5, 5, 5, and 5. Good. Now watch this. At each corner stood a 1 amos cube, known as a keren, a horn. Keren, a horn, 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 and horn. And that was 1 amma square. The inner corners of the horns, okay, now the inner corners over here, see that, the dotted lines? That's a square of 3 ammas by 3 ammas. 3 all over, making a square of 3 ammas by 3 amos. All right?
Which would be the Kukulkuranos excuse was purely decorative? I mean...
Good question. I'm not sure if it was purely decorative. I'm just going with what I'm seeing over here. They don't really explain it any better than that. At each corner stood a 1 amos cube known as a keren, as a horn. And then the inner chronos over here demarcate another square, but that's going to be 3 by 3. Okay? A strip 1 amma wide within the perimeter of this square was provided for the Kohanim so they could walk all the way around the top of the altar. A strip 1 amma wide within the perimeter of the square, okay, was provided so the Kohanim could walk all the way around the top of the Mizbeach. This left an area that was only 1 amma square. Wow. So, okay, so now the Kohanim seem to be walking around within this area over here. They're walking around over here.
They walked on the mizbeach?
Yeah, according to this. A strip one arm wide within the perimeter was provided for the Kohanim so they could walk all the way around the top of the altar. This left an area that was only one arm square for the burning of the sacrifices. That's in the middle. That little, clean little thing over there, that's your whole area for burning the sacrifices. Oh my goodness, that's pretty small. On the altar, and that was doing traffic of what, 1,000? Did 1,000 animals for Shlomo back in the day. Whew. Now it continues. On the altar of Shlomo, though, the area for burning sacrifices, was, get this, 400 square amos. It was 20 by 20. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, is recorded in Midos, chapter 3. Thus, the area for burning sacrifices on Shlomo's altar was 400 times larger than that of Moshe's altar. He had 400 times more area than Shlomo, than Moshe did. 400 times more space.
Yeah, where he wasn't carrying it around in the
desert, no. Right. I hear. That's true. You're right. But so, consequently, since 1,000 offerings could be burned in one day on Moshe's old copper altar, because you saw that already in chapter 3, Shlomo's altar was large enough for how much? 400,000 animals, because it was 400 times as big as Moshe's. No, that's much more space needed than all you need for a mere 142,000 offerings. This Shlomo could have offered up 3 times more animals and gotten away with it. He only needed space for 140,000 animals, and he had indeed big space for 400,000. Oh my goodness. Wow. So this is Rabbi Yossi Haglili making this logical argument. So Shlomo's altar was massive. It was humongously big. I mean, let's face it, it was enormous. Elamau katon me'achil sinup. So what's shot in the pasuk? I just read you a pasuk. Pasuk says, Mizbech ha'nachoshes, Hashem l'vnei Hashem, katon me'achil sinup. This copper altar was just too small to be able to handle all the animals. Are you completely, Michelle, how can you say that? The Solomonic altar was massively big. It could have handled 3 times as much traffic as Shlomo brought on it. So what do you mean it's too small? Ka'adam ha'om elachaveiro, says Rabbi Yossi Haglili. And this is what Rashi cites these words. Rashi is basically giving you this Gemara, in his commentary. He's kind of rewriting the Gemara. It's nice to see it, I guess, kind of inside us, if you will, with Art Scroll helps, because I think this is really kind of fleshing it out nicely. Says Rabbi Yossi Haglili, cited by Rashi, Ka'adam ha'om elachaveiro. It's like somebody who says to his friend, Ploni nanasu, so-and-so is a dwarf. That dude is a midget. Ufasal avoda. When in fact, he's pasal avoda, he's disqualified from the avoda. He can't do the avoda. So how do you say it? How do you speak to a friend and say, Shrel Barrow, he's pasal avoda? You say it like that. It's very crust. That's cross talk. That's just too out there. Instead, you say he's a dwarf. That's much better. So and so is a midget. If he is a midget, then you say that you blame it on his being vertically challenged.
Oh, instead of what was the press release again?
Pasala avoda. That you don't say.
Oh.
Instead, you blame it on his physicality. Don't ask me why. I think it's a little bit much to say, you see that dwarf over there? That guy is a dwarf. That seems to be preferable than to say, Shmer Berel Pasol La'avoda.
Why is in this muscle, why is he Pasol? Because he's a dwarf or for some other reason? Because
he's a dwarf.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't say it. But you don't say the words Pasol La'avoda. Instead, you do say, he's a dwarf. That's how you speak.
Well, I was heard many years ago, and it seems to be borne out by the minute. A rabbi comes over to a stranger in the minyan, right?
Right.
A Torah. He asks you, are you Cohen or Levi? You don't say no. You say Yisrael. Because you don't want to focus on
the negative.
Right.
Just say you're Israel, yeah. And that has some chashivas itself.
Right.
But don't speak ill about okay, I never heard that. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Rabbi Rola, for that. I'm going to read you the footnote that's going to give you the source for what I just said. Here's the footnote according to article. A Kohen who is a midget is disqualified from performing the temple service. However, it's a more refined manner of speech to describe him as a midget, parens, and let it be understood that he's disqualified, than to say openly that he's disqualified. For similar reasons, the pasuk, now we're going to bring it home, because I myself wasn't able to bring it home. For similar reasons, the pasuk does not say explicitly that the altar of Moshe was permanently discarded. Instead, it says euphemistically that it was too small for the many offerings of that day. That's how you talk. Instead of saying, listen, this thing is like, we got to be gonies this thing. We got to toss it, hide it.
We euphemistically call Shlomo's altar by the same name. We call it the copper altar, even if it's not.
Uh-huh. Okay. I hear. And so, okay, but thank you. And let me just get back to this. What were you going to do with Moshe's currently inadequate, too small, Mizbech? It's now a midget compared to the Solomonic monstrosity altar of stone. What are you going to call it? What are you going to do with it also? What are you going to do with this thing? Are you going to say, V'heim nashnu oisoi laginiza, V'heim gunzu oisoi, they therefore hit it. Do you know what? How do you say like that about Moshe's altar? This is an altar that Moshe made or built, Alpi Hashem, and it was in the Mishkan, and it's and in the Midbar, and it stayed in the Mishkan and Eretz Yisrael for centuries, and you're going to say, oh, it was going to get, they put it in the Geniza, and now it's getting eaten up by the worms, and it's got spider webs on. Chassid Shalom would say like that. Rather, you say it was a little bit on the small side. It wasn't able to handle the traffic. That is how you speak, and that is pshat according to Yossi Aglili. That, see, according to Yossi Aglili, the words in the Pasuk, the word in the pasuk, ki mizbach hanachoshes, asher lifnei Hashem, katon mehachil. For Rabbi Yossi Aglili, that's referring to Moshe's altar. It's just that it's too small. And you don't want to insult it overly so by saying that it deserves geniza. So therefore you say, nicely, it was a little bit of kleinchik, it was too small, and that's why it's no longer viable. But you don't say we're going to put this in Geniza, in the mothballs. No way. So Rabbi Yehuda, no. Rabbi Yehuda, that Mizbach HaNechoshes, which is too small, that's really referring to an enormously big, right? No, sorry. According to Rabbi Yehuda, got to keep everything straight over here. According to Rabbi Yehuda, Shlomo's altar, yes, was made out of stone, and that becomes the copper altar. And even that's too small to handle all the traffic, and that's why, for Rabbi Yehuda, even Shlomo's newly constructed stone altar, now called the Mizbach HaNechoshes, even that's too small for all the work, so therefore Shlomo's got to consecrate the floor, because the floor all over the temple area, you need that new space because you have so many animals. Rabbi Yossi Aglieli says, no. This Solomonic new structure was so big, it could have handled way more traffic than even Shlomo brought on it. So how do you understand Mizbech HaNechoshes? It's euphemistic talk. We don't want to embarrass Moshe and his altar. And we instead say that it was a little bit too small for all the work. But you don't say that you mothballed it in the Geniza. We continue. The Gemara asks how Rabbi Yehuda would answer Yossi's argument. Pretty interesting argument, Yossi. Well argued. I mean, even you and I can say that it was pretty creative. I mean, he did a lot of work. He put a lot of thought into that argument. No. Rabbi Yehuda, what's he going to say? What's his argument going to... How's he going to respond? Shot the cover, Rabbi Yossi. You know what his response is? Good gezucht. He said good. He's being my dish tickle. Yes, Rabbi Yossi answers good. Now, the Gemara is not going to let Rabbi Yehuda off the hook. The rest of it is very lumdish. It's very Gemara dick. And it's a little bit beyond the scope of even our class. Our job is to try to get some sort of understanding as to how to get pshat in the pasuk, seeing a long Rashi, what's pshat? So you have to go back to the source, got to see the Gemara in Zvachim, give Rabbi Yehuda his day in the sun, give Rabbi Yossi his day in the sun. Now we understand. The rest of it is for everybody's personal study. But at first blush, Rabbi Yehuda could say, Rabbi Yossi, good gezucht, you said very nicely. We'll do a little bit more.
This footnote says that whereas the area for Moshe's was 1 cubit, this one says it was 24 by 24 cubits.
Where was
576 times as great.
Uh-huh. Oh, I see. And that's a Rashi. That's in Rashi. Excuse me. Whereas this one, the place of its Ma'aracha, yes, Mrs. Berlin is pointing us out, that Rashi was writing 24 by 24, thus Shlomo's altar was 576 times as large as Moshe. Wow. If so, so what's pshat when it says that Kidash HaMelech, our Pasuk is 64. What's Kidash HaMelech is Tocha Chatzar? What does it mean that the king consecrated the middle of the court? That structure that Shlomo built was so big, it must have taken over the whole court. 576 times as big as Moshe. How much space do you think that courtyard was anyway? I mean, that's an incredibly big mizbeach. So what's pshat? It means, says Rashi, that he set the stone altar into it, into the chatzar, fastened to the floor. And that, lahavdil bin tumla tahara, that reminds me of what we have in this little building in this chapel. What do we have? If you've ever been downstairs, in our chapel building right here in which we're sitting, there is a 100-plus-year-old furnace built by a Cincinnati company. It's called the Octopus. To see it is to get scared. As soon as you walk into this room, you see a furnace that is so big, it's just bigger than any furnace you've ever seen in your life. Trust me, I've seen furnaces. This is massive. And it's got arms every which way. And it looks like an octopus. And it's a coal-burning thing. Well, not anymore. But back in the day, it burned coal. And there was a room for the coal to come through, and you'd be able to shovel the coal into the furnace, and it would keep things hot. Say the architects and the historians, not that I spoke to a lot of them, but I spoke to one guy, and he said, my theory is that way back in the day, these structures were so big and so heavy that when they were building the foundation, they would take a machine and lift this furnace down into the foundation, the structure, and they would build the house around it because that's how big this thing is. You can't possibly put it through a window or a door. You got to put it in when you're building the building. You put that massive thing in first. And you know what? That just reminds me when I see this reference to fastening a massive Mizbeach into the floor, I think, the Cincinnati Coal Company furnace in the bottom of the chapel of this building.
Mike Mulligan and the steam shovel, if you remember that. He didn't do that, so apparently he didn't. Yes, I don't want to waste time now with this, where the only thing he forgot to build is a way out, the town hall. Mike Mulligan, no. it was a fable taking place out in the 1930s when steam shovels, which were the earliest recognized form, of course, of excavation, were being phased out in favor of the modern equipment. And Mike Mulligan was an old stalwart. He related to his steam shovel like he named it, like it was his animal, you know, love animal. And the jobs were getting scarcer and scarcer because, he was being challenged or outmoded, what's the word I want. He was, being rendered obsolete, and yet that he refused to go with any modern technology to make any changes. Well, finally, I can't forget the backstory, but there's a need to do a new town hall, and for some reason, the other equipment wasn't available or something, so they went to Mike Mulligan and put everything into his work. He got the town hall got in time. Only problem is he forgot to leave himself a way out. So he left again and lived the rest of his years in the town hall.
Wow.
And there's a couple of, I think...
You couldn't get out the same way the other people got out?
Morals. I think that's the steam shovel.
The steam shovel had to say
that.
Mike Mulligan and the steam shovel.
Right. It was a classic book. Along the same genre as Cats for Sale. What was it? How many monkeys? I forget. There was a ping. A whole bunch of children. They made fake movies out of it. You can still get them online. What they did is they would take the book and they would make enlargements of the pages or the picture. These are books that were like for 5-6 year old. I was going to average the pages had to be 1/3 text, 2/3 picture. He would enlarge the picture, make it like a slide out of it, rotate the camera. The children were, I was totally. Taken in as fools and thought it's a movie. You know, because according to what the action is, they would move it whichever way would be suitable, and they would have usually a string quartet or something as background music, classical quartet, and narration. They would narrate the story. There's about 6 or 8 of those books that they did.
Kids would love that.
Stone Soup. They have a moral in them, and the I don't know. You can figure out what the moral is. I think sometimes I've seen shuls that are so taken up with. I even said about New Hope at the end, with doing things in the old, tried and true way for that shul, they'll let the world pass by, and then they may find themselves in the basement without a way out. So if you don't go forward.
True.
So
the Mike Mulligan story is very apt for many, many shuls. And we've got to make sure that we don't get caught, that nobody, especially us, get caught in the town hall room with no way out. Thank you, Reb Orlov. I have never heard of Mike Mulligan, and I'm serious, and the steam shovel. But remember that, Mendel, Mike Mulligan and the steam shovel. Try to look that up.
Go back to that.
I'm thinking that this altar had to have been built in the courtyard.
Yeah, I would think so, too. It had to be built there. And according to Yossi Glili, so big that it had to be interred. It had to be fastened to the floor. That's Yossi Glili. This is his understanding of it. Yossi Glili, big, big thing.
Yeah, I'm just wondering why it needed to be fastened. I don't think it could be moved.
Right. it's not going to be going any place anytime soon. Right.
I wonder how they would even fasten it.
I don't know. How could it, if so big, how could it mean? What's Pshat? He consecrated the middle of the floor. He took the Mizbeach and he put it into the floor. That's what he did. Okay. And so just one more second about that dwarf talk. This is how you talk. You say, even though I would have thought it's a little bit insulting, for one guy to save another guy. Shmerel over there, he's a dwarf. Yet that seems to be preferable language than saying he is pasul la'avoda. Rather, you should blame it on his height. Okay. And I'm going to continue reading the Judaica Press translation because I want to make this point. So-and-so is a dwarf. That's how you talk. You don't want to say Moshe Rabbeinu's thing is going to be Mizbech is going to be in a mothball area in a Geniza. No. You say rather, it's just too small. It doesn't handle the traffic anymore. That is, according to Rabbi Yossi, Shlomo, watch this, Shlomo disqualified Moshe's Mizbeach permanently.
Disqualified, what does that mean?
Strong talk.
You mean you only have one at a time? It's like with some of these computerized keys, cars or these, fobs, that once you get a new one, you have to disqualify the old one, or you, with a driver's license, you have to hand in your old one when your new one becomes validated, or...
Well, Abramov, you're asking a question. Rashi's language is in the Gemara in Zevachim, Uva lefoslo leolam.
Uva, what's the second word?
Lefoslo.
Foslo, leolam.
Leolam. This comes to passel up his mizbeach forever, with a footnote sending me over to Yudalit. Okay. Lishna ma'alya nakat. That's what Rashi says. Lishna ma'alya. That's why the pasuk says what it says.
And go back to the. And was to hakama hachil or the pasuk?
Umasha tala hakasuv. Ktano ba'olos shel osu ayom. You know, and the reason why the pasuk came on to that lashon.
It was an excuse. It was only that day.
Lishna ma'alya
nakat. In other words, I think you're saying that for normal use in the Beit HaMikdash, Moses would have been sufficient. But Shlomo decided to build a, I don't know why stone would be more covered or more nicer than the Choses. And indeed, there would have been a problem for that one day. Mm-hmm. So we use the excuse that the Moses was insufficient, didn't have the capacity for the large, amount for the one time. But that wasn't the real reason, apparently. It would have worked around it somehow. That Shlomo wanted to replace it with Bea. It would be like a shul that had a plain Aron Kodesh.
Or a mechitza that's a little bit too old, let's say. And it's going to get revamped. So what do you do with the old one?
No, I'm saying that's just what you do with the old one. It's why. Aron Kodesh is, I want to stick with my Aron Kodesh. It's not that nice.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll say, we got some more Sifrei Torah in, mm-hmm. or some Sifrei Torah, we want to take them to the small shul, to have more to do our kappas with, and the old one is not sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
The old one is not sufficiently large. So we have to replace it. Really, you don't want the old one anyway. But it was donated by a very, very chashuva leader of the community and its day. Mm-hmm. How can you say it's not as nice as what we want to put in?
Mm-hmm.
So you say it's just, it won't work for us.
It could be that with the massiveness and the amount of animals that he may have felt that copper would not be sufficient. Stone doesn't burn.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't melt.
Right. But the copper might have. There's a Rashi over here that says, the fire from Shemayim that was always on the Mizbeach